KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulvedo, and we are 2 weeks until many schools let out in California, including here at Sacred Heart Cathedral Prep, a Catholic school in San Francisco. And we are here today because we are launching a new series about how President Trump's education policies might impact private, parochial, and public schools in California. Joining us in front of this live classroom is our education reporter, Anna Tintakalis. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning, John. Thank you.
So let's talk first about school choice, because part of the reason we chose a private school is that it seems possible, based on President Trump's policies, many more students might be ending up in schools like this one.
Right. So Trump's big thing is this private school choice program. He's wanting to maybe hand you a school voucher that you could use to shop around for the private school of your choice, or what's called a tax credit scholarship, which is essentially a scholarship made up of donations that you could take around to shop.
Now, as you're talking about that, Anna, if you are here on a scholarship or some type of other voucher program, go ahead and say hi.
Hi.
So we're seeing a lot of the kids in this particular program, in this classroom, on those types of financial services you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's not surprising. Private schools are expensive, especially those independent, non-parochial private schools, which this is not. I think private schools, for the most part, have been trying to provide scholarships to students like yourselves. But, you know, we're in San Francisco, so there's a lot of money here, quite frankly, in the city to help subsidize students like yourselves. But when we talk about rural areas, they might not have a good public school option.
Now, with this in mind, are we getting any idea of how President Trump's policies might impact California-specific education policies?
So here's the thing. Trump does not have a lot of details about how he might impose these programs on all 50 states. What he has put forth is kind of the price tags around them. So, you know, at the end of this school year, we still really don't know how this would even work out. We know that he's putting this forward as the key piece of his education agenda. But in terms of the mechanics of it all, there's still a lot of questions to be answered.
And we're going to be exploring those questions all week long in this series we're calling Trump Ed, which you're putting together with our California partners around the state. I want to hear from some of these students now. The question I have right off the bat is, do you think that most students should have the type of education you are having? Do you support the idea of state tax dollars going to fund education like the one you're receiving? So who wants to start first?
I'm Sean Allen. I'm a junior. No, I don't think that at all. I actually have a lot of very good friends who go to public school, and it would be far better to add to the existing programs in public schools, put more funding into that, as opposed to try and pull more people away from that.
We asked who was on scholarship. You were one of the people who said that you were getting some type of financial assistance to go here. Don't you think other kids should have that opportunity that you're having?
You saw the hands in the classroom. There are a lot of people here that are on some form of financial aid and scholarship. I'm mostly here because my mom wanted me to have a Catholic education. That was part of her upbringing. So me having a scholarship is helping me be here, but I would be here regardless. And I think that really the priority should be on public education.
And we saw a lot of heads, not in agreement with Sean when he was saying that he didn't think taxpayer money should be going towards schools like this. Does anyone disagree with him? Does anyone think that, you know, the government should help pay for students to come to schools like this one?
I'm Catherine Pan, and I am a junior.
Hi, welcome to the California Report.
Thank you.
So you are someone, I guess, who says that the state should be paying to help schools like this one.
Yes, I do think so, because I believe that parents should have the option to send their children to the best school that they want to send them to. Like, for example, taking Sean, his parents wanted to send him to a Catholic school for a Catholic upbringing. But then in the case that his parents didn't have the money for that, they would have to resort to sending him to a public school. So I feel like parents should basically have the option to send their children to where they feel is best, because not all cases is the public school at the same standard as the private school.
We are seeing somebody who wants to come up. Go ahead and tell us your name.
My name is Lucas Beard, and I'm a junior. The problem and the solution, actually, isn't delegitimizing public schools and defunding them. It is creating kind of a new culture of funding public schools and legitimizing them. I have relatives in Spain. I'm half Spanish. And in Spain, the public schools are very, 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 very high.
Now, Lucas, you were talking about Spain. Spain has much higher tax rates than the United States, including even in California. In your household, how do your parents feel about paying taxes?
My parents...
You're getting a smile
like
on
It's like a love-hate relationship. Because I actually, like, personally, I'm a proponent of high taxes. Obviously, I'm not, you know, making money. And my parents, they like high taxes, or at least my mom more than my dad.
What does your dad say about taxes, just out of curiosity? Has he ever complained about them?
Yeah, I argue with him a lot about it, actually. He says he's the typical, it stimulates the economy and stuff like that. And I'm kind of like, no, like the Great Recession, the Great Depression, like those were the highest bracket of the marginal tax rate. That's when they're at their lowest points. And that's when we had economic recession, so it's not feasible.
You seem to know more about tax policy than a lot of people making education policy.
Well,
and I love that you and your dad argue over that.
And, you know, as we bring this to a close, Anna, what Lucas laid out is really where it's at. Money, resources, where is it going to come from? Where is it going to go? That seems to be the central point of any talk about education policy. We're going to hear these series of stories come out all week. Anna, I want to say thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you, class. It was great meeting you.
We're going to go now to Eureka, where another local story caught our eye. This one from the Times Standard. It reported that dredging on Humboldt Bay could be done this year. So why is that such a big deal? Well, because it's been a decade since the bay has been cleaned, and some 80 million gallons of mucky, goopy sludge have piled up. But in order to dredge the bay, the Harbor District and the city of Eureka need approval from the EPA, along with other federal and state agencies, about where to put that gunk. And those approvals are moving about as fast as boats in thick mud, as KHSU's Natalia Estrada reports.
Chuck DeWitt has a boat. It's called the Golden Rule, it's docked at the Eureka Public Marina, and every day, DeWitt worries the Golden Rule will become a semi-permanent, unmovable fixture in Humboldt Bay.
Absolutely. When at low tide, no one can go anywhere. You know, the boats here are either out in deep water or they're stuck in the mud.
But comparatively, he's getting off lucky. Hundreds of fishermen and boat owners are having the same problems at a cost of thousands per boat.
The commercial fishing fleet is devastated.
Leroy Zerling owns a boat and vessel repair service on the bay. He says the city and harbor district need to do something before more damage is done.
We're going to lose a lot of boats to Crescent City and Fort Bragg this year because they're unable to get in and out. The Coast Guard's repositioning. The Marine Spill Response Corporation, the oil responser boats are also looking for different spots. Even the fire boats in jeopardy.
The sediment comes after heavy rains, but dredging is not as simple as it seems. The Environmental Protection Agency requires permits and plans to dispose of that gunk. In 2007, the EPA said no to any future dredging that involves disposing the gunk on the beaches. So plans to move that gunk to the shoreline, for example, are opposed by environmentalists like Jennifer Cult of Humboldt Baykeeper.
Well, here in Humboldt County, it seems to be sort of a repeating theme that the local agencies want to fight state and federal protections, and it just, you know, doesn't really seem like the most productive and effective way to go about things.
So far, there are 9 proposals to dispose of the sludge, but Cult says every plan still needs approval by the EPA, the California Coastal Commission, and the Army Corps of Engineers. In the meantime, the boats sit or risk getting stuck. For the California Report, I'm Natalia Estrada in Eureka.
Well, moving now from Eureka to outer space. Yes, outer space. We heard that a California company is trying to, no joke, build a recycling program for space. And with that, it's time for Trash Talk. We're joined by our resident trash expert, Lindsay Hosha. Hi.
Hi, John.
Recycling in space. What are the colors of the bins?
Well, there is no color because there are no recycling bins in space at all right now. They don't recycle.
So what happens to the trash up there?
Oh, they burn it.
Yeah. What?
They burn it. They burn it in space.
Do they send it on a ship towards the sun and it makes this like spectacular?
Yeah, and then there's these blazing colors and they all celebrate and it's a big thing and they hug each other. No, it's not that exciting. They have a spacecraft called the Russian Progress and they launch these 3 to 4 times a year. It goes up. They're not manned. So it refuels the International Space Station with supplies. And then they fill it with all their trash and then they release it and it burns up in the atmosphere. So trash is just getting burned in the atmosphere.
So you've told us on this very program that there's lots of trash on land and there's lots of trash at sea. And now you're telling me that there's lots of trash in the air.
Yeah, space junk.
Wow. Well, with that, I can understand why they would want to put a recycling program there. And this is the California connection to this particular episode of Trash Talk. It's a California company who's kind of pioneering this.
Yeah, that's true. A Mountain View-based company called Made in Space that manufactures products for space built the first 3D printer that was used on the International Space Station in 2014, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's pretty recent, too. What are they printing up in space?
They're printing things mainly from plastic. So wrenches, like plastic baggies, food containers, things like that. Right now, astronauts have to try to reuse those things on their own, but can only reuse them a certain amount of times. But the idea is that eventually they'll have this all-in-one 3D printer and recycler that uses a plastic called Ultim, which is very heat resistant. And they could print something and then you put that item back in and it prints something else without any degradation or loss of quality to the plastic.
So right now, if you need a wrench and you're an astronaut, you print it out on this 3D printer, which, by the way, it's crazy. This is 2017. Use your wrench, blah, blah, blah. And then you send it into the atmosphere where it eventually burns up. But the plan is to be able to just refeed that wrench and have it be something else. What else would they need up there?
Yeah, have it come out into something else. I mean, food packaging, they do need a lot of plastic bubble wrap to make sure that things aren't like bumping around in there. And so
they have a bunch of vases on the
nice vases. Yeah, you know, they're growing tulips up there and they need their they need their vases.
Like, what's a bubble wrap for? Anyways, so this company's doing this.
Made in Space, the Mountain View company, is doing it. And now the next step is at the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. They are currently testing this specific all-in-one printer and recycler. It exists. It's about the size of a dorm fridge. It's this metal container. And they figured out that it works. So the goal is that next year in the spring, they're going to launch it to the International Space Station.
Wow. So in the meantime, when you see that shooting star at night, you're probably making a wish on a flaming bag of trash.
Yes.
Perfect. Lindsay Hoshaw, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, John.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, celebrating 20 years of advancing healthcare that works for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
A little song called Space Junk by Devo, and that's the California Report for Monday, May 15th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulveda. Have a great day.